Well, for you news junkies, we're going to talk a little bit about black box voting. We're going to be talking about the presidential elections, the primaries, and just what is going on through the eyes of Bev Harris next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. Bev Harris, of course, has been on this program many times, founder of blackboxvoting.org, an investigative reporting and public education organization. She works toward exposing problems with electronic voting, featured as a Emmy-nominated documentary called Hacking Democracy. And it's been a couple of years, Bev, but I'm glad you're back. Here we go again, right?
Well, this year looks like it's going to be a wild ride.
It sure does. They're already talking about possible improprieties in Iowa on the Democratic end. The Des Moines Register, the newspaper, not too happy.
Yeah, the Des Moines Register has done a stellar job of reporting. You know, in this day and age, we don't always see great journalism, but they really have. And what they've done is they've been holding them accountable. And when the numbers don't add up or something doesn't make sense, they've been insisting on an answer and asking to see records. And they did that in 2012 with the Republican caucus in Iowa. And that, of course, turned out, at first they announced the wrong winner, and then it was found that they announced Santorum, and then it was, first it was Romney, then it was Santorum, then they said, we don't know who it is, then they said, we'll never know who it is. Then it turns out that 51 locations reported the wrong numbers, or the numbers changed. But a lot of that had to do with the investigative reporting of the Des Moines Register, who kept asking to see the forms and exposing it when they didn't match. Well, the Republicans cleaned up their act in terms of their transparency and their record-keeping this year. But this year, the Democrats were very opaque. The Des Moines Register called it basically like the equivalent of a smoke-filled back room by the time it was all said and done. And they are calling for the Democrats to start showing the underlying information so that people can actually check and see that this stuff is true.
Do you think there could be some improprieties out there, Bev?
Well, you know, it's, in my opinion, when you announce a winner but you refuse to reveal the sum of the parts, I mean, the parts that make up the whole, in other words, a total result is a total. It's a total of a bunch of smaller parts. What they've done in the Democratic caucus is they converted the actual votes into their estimate of what they thought the delegates might be. So they didn't ever actually reveal what the actual votes were. What the Des Moines Register is asking for is a couple things. One, show what the votes are. You know, why not?
That's right.
We're
entitled to it.
Don't pat us on the head and say we're too silly. You know, we can't understand it. We might misinterpret it. Show us the votes. And secondly, they had a whole bunch of coin tosses where there were ties or sometimes problems with the vote which they couldn't resolve. And they would resolve it with a coin toss. And they didn't really account for those very well. There's been, you know, conflicting stories about those. But basically what the Register is asking for, and I totally agree, they're saying, just tell us how many coin tosses they were and why you had them and what the result was. The allegations were that one candidate won all the coin tosses, which I don't think is actually true. But, you know, I think it's an impropriety when you refuse to reveal the information.
I agree. Yes. Jeb Bush is saying, now here's a guy who is apparently non-existent in the primary so far. He doesn't show up in the polls. He's way down there. Says, New Hampshire will surprise all of you. So when I heard statement.
That's kind of an eerie.
Yeah, it was. I heard that statement. I said, what do they know that we don't
know? Well, I remember in 2000 when he said, wait a minute, Florida is going to come through for Bush, you know, and it did.
Yeah.
I actually think that New Hampshire is going to surprise some people too. New Hampshire is very troubling, more so than Iowa. Iowa has had its glitches, but here's the good thing. Because the system is getting more and more transparent, we're able to see those things, and then we're able to address them and then improve them for the next time. That's really how we have to look at this. New Hampshire has, instead of making it more transparent, they're making it less and less transparent. And it really is very troubling. For example, One thing that happens, you see all these numbers coming out of New Hampshire on election night. You'll see them next Tuesday.
That's right.
Those are not the numbers. What those are, I actually went around and found out how they do that. Those are somebody gets paid in each local town to tell the AP what the number is. It's not actually based on even a piece of paper or even a results tape. It's just somebody tells the AP what it is. So the real numbers, which are on the actual results tapes and the signed forms, are couriered to the Secretary of State's office in Concord, New Hampshire, and it takes a couple days. And so then I wanted to see what happens then. You know, what happens to these real numbers? Well, it turns out that they all go to a lady named Karen, and she's been there for like 100 years, and Karen types them into her personal Excel spreadsheet, and no one's allowed to watch.
That's nice.
Yes.
Can we trust Karen?
It doesn't matter. There's no such thing as a trust with any kind of a place in elections. I mean, the minute you say, I will do this over here, thank you very much, no one can look.
And you can't see
it. One of the things, though, I wanted to see what was on those pieces of paper. So after Karen was done typing them all in, I went to the office, sat there all day looking at the papers, and they had all these things crossed out and numbers that were scribbled over and a new one in there. And I was like, well, who did this, all these cross-outs? I mean, hundreds of forms were crossed out. And I don't know who did it. So the next election, this was in 2008 that I was there. 2012, a New Hampshire citizen named Deborah Sumner, who's done some really good work, she went in after the primary and said, I would like to watch Karen enter the numbers and videotape it. And they said, oh, absolutely not. That would violate Karen's privacy.
Karen's privacy. That's all they cared about.
Yes. You know, and it doesn't matter. I'm not really dumping on Karen. She might be a perfectly nice lady. But it's the process. It's a ridiculous process. And so for that reason, I have to say, you know, there's no particular reason to believe that whatever we see on the New Hampshire State website is at all the same as what came out of the each polling place.
What percent, Bev, of the polling now happens to be electronic?
In New Hampshire?
All over.
Well, all over the U.S., it's about 99%. In New Hampshire, it is about 99% of the people vote on software-driven systems, but only about 60% of the locations. The New England does everything differently, and New Hampshire has about 230 places, and each one is a town, and it's in charge of its own results. And some of these towns have only like 12 people, so they hand count, and there's probably 30 or 40% are hand counted, but they're so small population-wise that they're really only 1% of the total population. So, yeah, about 99% of it's electronically counted in New Hampshire. It's not electronic push-button voting, but it's electronically counted.
I still think this is weird that we're going to have a brokered Republican convention.
You know, I'm wondering about that, too. And, of course, there's also noise about Michael Bloomberg stepping into the race if he doesn't think that it's the right combination of candidates. He's an independent, you know, so he could probably do that without going through the primary rigmarole. This is really going to be an extremely interesting election.
It really is. That's why I think Jeb Bush is still hanging in there. You know, most people with his minuscule results and polls would have said, well, I'm going to drop out like
right.
Huckabee has and so many others. And Rand Paul is called to quits now. Jeb Bush is not going to quit. He will, along with Trump, Rubio and Cruz, he'll be one of the last men standing.
That's very interesting. And you know, I will tell you a prediction I have. I'm not always right with my predictions, but I think South Carolina is going to be a blowout and is going to... South Carolina is a really, really problematic situation. It should not even be considered as a credible result.
Really? How come?
At all.
How come?
And South Carolina is so... under the thumb of political party bosses in the most invisible way possible, that I really think that, you know, what I would expect to see in South Carolina is that the candidates who are not favored with their state political party will be dropped down considerably in South Carolina because they can. In South Carolina, it's completely paperless touchscreens. All of the machines are the same make and model. All of them are programmed by the same person. All of the results that come out of the machines are then sent down to Tampa, Florida, which to a different company.
That's the company that does
them, and that company is owned by a company in Spain. I mean, it is the most opaque possible process.
Jeez.
And if there are any questions, there's no possible way to get at what actually happened.
What happened to Diebold? Are they still around?
Yes. What happened, they don't call it Diebold anymore. Diebold's election systems was acquired by Election Systems and Software, which is a South Carolina company. So basically, one company runs about two-thirds of the voting systems in the United States. And then there was an antitrust movement, and they gave part of it over to the other main company. So essentially now there's four major companies, and three of them are very closely interrelated with actually intermingling ownership.
You have a big report coming out this month.
Yeah.
Are you going to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, this is the first time I have talked publicly about it. I've been working on it for several months now.
Okay.
And it is big. Fasten your seatbelt.
Here we go. You're breaking it right here.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. You know, what happened, there's a lot of really good people around the country who are interested, and they do their part by checking into things. There's a gentleman by the name of Benny Smith in Memphis, Tennessee. You're going to be hearing more about him. He's done just such courageous work to expose this. He's a database programmer in real life, and he has found that the systems used basically all over the United States have an instruction in them. And it was an instruction that was actually changed. It used to say, count each vote as a whole number. I mean, each vote is one. You don't have a fraction of a vote. I can't vote one and a half.
One and a half, that's right.
So each vote is a whole number. They used to say, count each vote as a whole vote. Now, there was an instruction that was changed in the program to instruct it to instead count each vote as a fraction. That's really major, because then he found evidence that that was actually being used.
That's weird.
More than weird, it's intentional. And it was not just being used in Memphis where he was, but I have databases from all over the country. And, you know, once he gave me the trail of breadcrumbs where to look for this instruction, I found the instruction in every one of them. And he then went to the next step and he said, well, now what would I need it to report it as a fraction for? Well, here's why. Let's suppose, George, that you and I are in an election.
Okay.
Now, I know this is math and it's late at night, but it's worth it, I promise you. Let's suppose we say, we don't care what people actually voted for George and Bev. We want George to get 25% of the votes and Bev to get 75% of the votes. Now, if there's 10 votes, that means you're going to get 2.5 and I'm going to get 7.5.
Mm-hmm.
If you only have a thing that can add it as whole numbers, it's going to round it off wrong. It's going to say I got 8 votes.
And I get 2 instead of me getting 3.
And math isn't going to work.
Right.
Okay? So if you have an intention of putting in preset percentages for candidates, you want it to be able to count votes as fractions so it will round them off correctly. And that is, Benny Smith, he went and he thought, well, let me just try this out. I'll take it for a test run. And he took a real vote database and he just assigned each of the candidates a fraction. And lo and behold, it shifted all their votes around, put, you know, some of this guy's over there, and they all ended up with the percentage that he set. It's so dangerous because he could do it precinct by precinct. So, for example, Memphis, it has a large number of black precincts and a large number of white precincts. So it wouldn't really work to just do it for the whole county. But you can set Memphis precinct by precinct. You can say, well, you know, the black precincts will give them, oh, let's say 3/5 of a vote.
They literally can control,
you know,
it that way.
That's a bit of a throwback to the days when African Americans were assigned 3/5 of a vote, which is real in history.
Were they really?
Yes, that in the early days, in the 1700s, there was a time period when African Americans were assigned 3/5 of a vote.
Jeez.
And but essentially, you could set it however you want, and there is I have been receiving reports for years now from statisticians and candidates who tell me, I know they preset the percentage and here's why, and they give me all these stats and I go, I can't believe, I'm not a statistics person. But you know what? I think we have to start giving some of these statistical anomalies some credence now, because we know, and this is not a theory, this is in there. It is instructing the system to count each vote as a fraction. And there's no application for that. There's no situation where you're going to say, you know, and if any of your callers have an idea for why this could possibly be legitimate, I'm all ears. I want to know. But the truth is we don't have any elections, public elections in the U.S., where we count people as fractions.
You know, it's interesting, too, is when was the last time we were even questioning the possibility of impropriety in primaries for specific parties? I mean, we always question the presidential election, mm-hmm. right? What state are they going to steal? What are they going to do? Now we're worried about the primaries.
Well, you know, I've often thought that that would be the place to do it because there aren't as many eyes on the primary. And I'm glad you brought that up because there was a primary in South Carolina which really proved that their system is not to be trusted. It was a primary a couple years back, and it was for a seat in Congress. And a guy ran and won by quite a margin, and he actually was a completely unknown name. He was sort of mentally handicapped.
How did he win?
He sat in his chair in his house. He didn't campaign. He didn't put any money into it. And the guy he ran against was quite well known and respected.
Weird.
And, yeah, and everybody thought maybe it was just a programming error. Well, obviously, you know,
something.
When you have someone like that win, then they go into the general election, and it's obvious they're going to lose, which he did. But that was an example of a primary that was either tampered with or somebody coded it clumsily.
They wanted him to win so he'd get crushed in the general election.
Well, it would appear that way. And people often ask me, do you think this was on purpose or you think it was human error? And my answer is always, I don't care if it's human error. Does the bank care if the teller accidentally puts $100 in her pocket and says it's a human error? I don't care, you know. It isn't about whether it's someone was deliberate. It's about that it happened. It can't happen. Or if it does happen, it has to be transparent so we can see it, so we can address it. You know, I'm not just all about calling people out so that I can point fingers at them and you know, say, shame, shame on you. I'm about solving it. And I think most people know you can't improve a system or solve problems unless you can identify the problem. If you don't have a transparent system, you can't see the problem.
So at what point do we vote with our smartphones?
Never, I hope.
I think it's going to happen.
There's a push. Well, let me simplify it. It's a very simple problem. It's not even about security in the end. It's about, do we want a private vote or not? If we are willing, and I think this is a dialogue that maybe we should have, if we're willing to give up the secret ballot, then voting by smartphone is viable, because if they publish who voted and how they all voted, we could all see, we'd all know it was counted correctly. But right now, the systems, when they use this kind of voting, online voting, smartphone voting, what they're doing is turning the whole system over to the administrator of the program.
Oh, no question.
And they are also not secret ballots.
Now, you've increased your voting by a huge margin.
No, actually, that's what they say, and that's what we would think. But when they have actually had internet elections, it's actually dropped participation.
Really?
Which is, we don't know why, but... for example, there was a Hawaii election that used it.
Hold on for a second, Bev. Hold on for one sec. We're already at the break. Fast half hour. More to come. And welcome back to Coast. Bev Harris with us from Black Box Voting. Bev, you were talking about an election in Hawaii. What happened there?
Yeah, they went from regular ballots to internet voting. And it was very surprising because they had been having not a great turnout, about 28% turnout in the regular election. And when they went to internet voting, it dropped to 7%. And the same thing happened in British Columbia. They did an election, and internet voting, actually the participation dropped dramatically. It's a little odd that it would do that. And I have to think that it would eventually get more participation. But what we have to remember is if we want to do internet voting, we have to make the choice to give up the secret ballot.
Well,
and, you know, maybe that's something that should be discussed. It certainly should be out in the open. The fact of the matter is, the ugly fact of the matter is, that with internet voting, we've already given it up, and it's just that they are keeping it in, they're harvesting the information and just keeping it, you know, to themselves, which doesn't help transparency. So if we're going to give up the secret ballot, then we should give it up in a way that increases transparency.
Elections historically have been stolen with all kinds of things. So with black box voting, isn't it just newer technology to do what they've always been doing?
Well, it's also on a much broader scale, and with and it's harder to catch. As you may have, I mean, you were absolutely right. This is so important for us to remember. Elections have always been stolen, still get stolen. You know, if you, there's lots of arrests for election fraud, even still. I'm not talking about voter fraud. I'm talking about election officials.
Dead people still voting.
Election. This happens a lot. It's important to know this because there seems to be sort of this shame. How dare you not trust the great United States of America? Look, it's in our culture. We've always done this. But when you add technology the way we've done it, you can add technology and dramatically increase transparency. But that's not how we've done it. The way we've done it, we've added technology, put controls in the hands of a very few people or sometimes only one person, and said nobody can ever check anything. So it really isn't about technology is a bad thing. It's about the way it's been applied has removed accountability, and we should need to apply it in a way where it restores accountability, and that can be done.
It can be done, but what do we need to do to get it done?
Well, we need to start holding people accountable. You know, you opened this hour with a discussion of the Des Moines Register and calling out the Iowa Democrats.
Yeah, they think Iowa's a laughingstock.
But that's the kind of thing we need, because what happened in 2012, when that same scenario, but it was with the Republicans, then the Republicans opened it up and made the Iowa caucus transparent. And the Democrats will too, I'm pretty confident. But we have to set the bar where we want it, you know, and if we want transparency, then all of us, you know, need to work at that and say, this is what we want, and don't tell us, pat us on the head and say we're supposed to have confidence and trust. We want accountability, and if you don't get it this time, we still want it, and we're just going to keep after it until we get it.
Bev, when you put together Black Box Voting, then you wrote the book, of course, Black Box Voting,
right,
Ballot Tampering in the 21st Century. What happened? What did you see?
Well, you know, at that time, it was a story that hadn't really been told very much. And I had found, what I found was that if I looked at elections in local places, the local paper was reporting on very significant problems with the electronic voting. But it was never tied together with any other location. So it would just be looked at like some sort of anomaly that only happened in Pottawatomie County, Iowa, which was one of the places. In truth, when I looked at it as a whole, I found hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of examples, and a pattern emerged where it was this, you know, the same companies, and it was the same type of problems, and it was like, wait a minute, we have a problem overall. I kind of misunderstood the issue, as many people did, though. I thought it was a problem about security. But I came to learn that really it's a problem of transparency and accountability. We have to be able to account for the doggone election. If you can't account for it, what have you got?
Well, that's true. But the improprieties, who do you think conceived of this? I mean, somewhere along the line, somebody who developed electronic voting machines thought of the way to steal. Was there some malice from the get-go?
Well, you know what I've looked at, because I've done a lot of field work over the years, and the first thought I had was, oh, you know, it's one party stealing from the other. No, that didn't turn out to be true when you looked at it more deeply. I think that, as you mentioned, we've always had election theft, and there's actually always been a little group of fixers that work sometimes at the local level, sometimes at the state level. And, you know, with the Kennedy election, for example, in West Virginia, you know, there was some fixers there that helped him get the guy in, you know. And it's just the way it's been done. I think some of those fixers, you can almost see their fingerprints on this, because in one location where they had lever machines, which the fixer had to use a certain strategy for, when they went to electronic voting, the tampering evidence you tended to see was the same approach that was used with the lever machines. Other places where they had different systems, so it was like the fixers kind of are the same guys that they were back in the 80s in some cases, but they've actually just sort of changed their tune, and now they're doing the electronic stuff. Who came up with the whole idea? It could have been completely somebody who was idealistic. I mean, we were doing SAT tests and our school tests, remember, with the little number 2 pencil,
yep,
and filling in the stuff. And it came out of that, where they went, hey, we could vote like that. We could fill things in with a number 2 pencil and the machines could read it. But, of course, when the fixers get it, and they really are fixers, by the way, there's so many good public citizens doing really good work.
Right.
One of them's in Arizona. His name's John Brakey, and he's been doing public records requests, freedom of information requests.
Does he get his info?
Yes. Okay. And one of the things he uncovered in his freedom of information request was that there was a man in Arizona by the name of William Doyle who was making the vote databases, sending them to the counties, and then also helping them on election night, and they were like emailing the votes back and forth to him. And he was like not a public official. Nobody would even admit he existed. So then John did public records requests for all payments to and from William Doyle, all emails to and from William Doyle. He found that William Doyle, by the time he added up all the invoices that he got in public records, was being paid over $1 million a year and had been doing this since 1985. So that is, you know, that's an example of sort of this middleman who nobody even knew existed, who John has proven, and I kind of follow the breadcrumbs because I want to see for myself, but he's right. This guy literally does the whole deal in Arizona. They send the stuff to him, and they're sending him stuff in the middle of election night, and he's, you know, the troubleshooter. So, again, I'm not saying he's honest or dishonest. I'm saying this is crazy. We're giving this one guy the keys to the kingdom in that state. And I found a counterpart to this guy in Arkansas, and I found one in Kentucky, and I found one in West Virginia, and I found one. I mean, so I know that these guys exist where they have a specialized knowledge. And they usually have been doing ballots and stuff, you know, for a long, long time. These guys have been around for ages, and it goes from in a certain family, like the family and the son does it. So I would have to say that the issue of election integrity and election theft, it's part of our culture, and we have to continue to, you know, upgrade our own way of doing things just as we upgrade technology. We don't do things. You know, we can't watch elections the same way as we did in the 1800s. We have to watch them with some knowledge of technology.
With these elections, are the people who are controlling the electronic returns, are they paid off by anybody?
Well, you know, what they've done is they've privatized it. Although, you know, John Brakey has found that this one guy in Arizona is paid very handsomely, and he certainly has his the ability to control the returns. But we, you know, it's since most of these are private companies, they don't have to give us any of their stuff. So if a corporation, for example, was to say, I want this candidate in, and they make a payment to a private company, there's no way for us to get that short of an FBI investigation, and the FBI has to have something to go on.
It seems so that they don't want to get involved. People just don't want to investigate.
You know, I think they do. I think they want to get involved if they feel like they can make a difference. I think there's where the problem is. I can relate. I have had times where I just look at this and go, I feel like I can't do anything. But the truth is, big things happen when people get involved, and you can get involved with just your own set of skills. There was a wonderful gentleman who just passed away last night, in fact, from cancer. He was in Riverside, California. He was a former county auditor. He used his auditing skills to go after electronic voting very successfully. They banned it from the county eventually and gave him a proclamation and an award, you know. But he used those. There was a guy in Wisconsin who used his computer skills to work on the testing part of it. There's Benny Smith in Memphis who's using his database skills to get at things. So I think people, they make a huge difference, much more so than they realize. And I just you saw it a little bit when you saw the videotapes from the Iowa caucus. You saw people coming forward and advocating for their own right. There was a gentleman, there was a lot of arguing in one of them, and he said, "You're taking away my right to democracy." The guy was trying to take the votes and make them count secretly. This was a Democratic caucus. Make them count secretly outside, and everybody would just hand their vote to him and go home. And this man was standing up to it. He was saying, "No, no, you have to do it in public." And he prevailed. You know, so the thing is, people do like to get involved if they feel they have a fighting chance. And what my message to people is, you have a fighting chance to make a difference. You won't have a magic wand where you can just make everything right overnight, but you can make a real difference, especially at the local level.
If you had a chance to change anything about any of this, what would it be?
Oh, I would make the whole darn thing transparent. I would, so that anybody can see the ballots. The ballots don't contain or aren't allowed to contain. They don't contain, you know, personal information. They're not supposed to. So looking at a ballot doesn't mean I can see who put that ballot in the system. But yeah, anybody should be able to see the ballots. Anybody should be able to see the reports. Anybody should be able to see the data that's in these machines. They could put it online. I mean, I think my big thing is I agree it's not going to be perfect, but I want to see the warts, and I want to be able to address them. That's all. And there's so many ways to do that, and I think technology is improving that, really, because we've got all these great mobile phones. We can just go around snapping pictures of stuff and scanning documents on our phone and emailing them to each other and stuff. That, in third world countries, is making a real difference. In Kenya, in Afghanistan, they have terrific problems with their elections and with corruption. But the citizens there are using their smartphones to, like, transfer information. Hey, the vote in my precinct was such and such, so when it gets to the national headquarters, it better still be that, you know. If they can do it in Kenya and Afghanistan, I think we could do it here.
If we want to.
Yeah, but you know what? Increasingly, I'm seeing people actually do that, where you're seeing people actually take these pictures. And some people are litigating this stuff. In Texas, there's a candidate. One of the things people can do, by the way, kind of an interim step, you know, because you have to sometimes just take it step by step. All of these voting machines, and especially the touch screens, they all have something inside them called ballot images. Now, what that is supposed to be is a picture of each ballot. And so this candidate said, "I think I'll ask for the ballot images in my recount, because Texas state law says they have to give them to her." Oh, my goodness, they did not want to give those to her. They said they didn't exist, even after they had just said they did exist. And I know they exist because I have some. You know, we could ask for those in South Carolina, in fact. You know, local citizens, if they think that the result looks statistically hinky, they could say, "Hey, I want to see the ballot images from inside those voting machines." And all they are is, like, you know, a picture of every ballot. It's not really a picture. The voting machine kind of makes its own ballot and fills in its own X's, so it's not 100%, you know, reliable. But certainly, you could compare what happened with the company in Florida with, you know, the ballot image from your local precinct. There's a lot of people that get into this stuff. Once they get hooked, they get hooked pretty good because it's very, very fascinating.
Well, it sure is. But it's pretty remarkable that what's going on these days. And what really baffles me, and let's look at Iowa, how close on both sides, Republicans and Democrats, how close those percentages were. Nobody really won by a large margin at all.
Right.
I mean, they were really close.
Right.
And anything could happen with something like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think, of course, the primaries and caucuses, these very early ones, what the media does with that is they make it all into a game of what the story will be. So, for example, in New Hampshire, if they've been announcing this drumbeat, Bernie Sanders is going to win by a lot. Well, now all Hillary has to do is have him win by a little, and the whole story will be Hillary is.
That's right.
That,
well, that's
now.
What's happening. That's what's happening with Rubio now.
Is that right?
I mean, he came in third, but he came in close, and now people are saying he may be the up and comer. Mm-hmm. He may be beating Cruz in New Hampshire.
And to some extent, that's just people talking at the water cooler, which is fine. But to some extent, it's actually manufactured and put out there by the campaigns. For example,
sure.
In South Carolina, we've been hearing this drumbeat, and it's very orchestrated. And it's been for a while. All black people vote for Hillary. All black people vote for Hillary. South Carolina is black. Well, first of all, South Carolina is not black. It's white and black. But what I expect we will see, because South Carolina is so tamperable, is that there will be a very strong showing, and then it will be attributed to, well, see, it goes to show you all black people vote for Hillary, South Carolina's black. When you start hearing this thing from the pundits and they're all saying the same thing, you know, that's actually talking points, and it's usually put out by some campaign operative, and it's to create a certain expectation and kind of drive the dialogue.
What do you think's going to happen? What's your gut tell you?
Overall. Well, I think that the Republicans, it is up for grabs. Could be a brokered convention, could be Trump, could be somebody else comes from behind. I think the Democrats, because I know that the state party bosses have tremendous control over the election system itself, I think once we get to Super Tuesday, it may be all over.
Not too late for Joe Biden on the Democratic side, is it?
Hasn't he said he's not going to run?
Yeah, but you know what? Shoulda, woulda. We'll see what happens.
I know. And I guess Bloomberg said he might get into it. It really is very interesting this year.
Bev, when we come back at the top of the hour, let's take a final hour of phone calls. They're already starting to call for you, so we shall do that with Bev Harris from blackboxvoting.org. And don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, email me at george@coasttocoastam.com.